Can I be really honest?
Sure.
I've been did you have the Goofy Movie VHS tape?
No, I did not.
You didn't watch Goofy Movie until like a couple years ago, huh?
I mean, I saw it on TV. I just didn't own it.
Okay. At the beginning of the Goofy Movie on the VHS, I'm sure people will know what I'm talking about. There was a music video for Dr. Something. And I, for the life of me right now, cannot remember what the name of that fucking doctor is. And it's driving me insane. I bring this up because I need to take a quick pause and figure out what this fucker's name was. I'm not cheating, I promise. I'm just so morbidly distracted right now.
We've been talking about recording this episode for like 2 weeks, and all you could think about is a Goofy Movie trailers.
Dr. Looney, that's what it was.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I'm your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie, and I do not know a lot about Doctor Who.
And today we are looking at Series 4, Episodes 4 and 5, The Santaran Stratagem and The Poison Sky.
Yes!
That almost rhymes.
The Santaran Stratagem and the Poison Sky do not rhyme,
Zach. Episode 5 and Poison Sky.
I mean, it's one of those loose rhymes.
Yeah, it's a slant rhyme for sure. You have not met the Santaran yet, but this is another classic Doctor Who alien.
I know you're saying Santaran. I, though, still have Baldur's Gate brain and am hearing Zentarum.
Mm.
And this is not a Legion of Thieves, I imagine.
No, these are the Santarans. They are an alien race from the classic series. The Santarans are another race that first appeared in the Third Doctor's run. Much like the Nestines that you met in the very first episode.
The Nestines.
Yeah, the mannequin people. They are also from the Third Doctor's run. This is probably, I'm trying to think of like where I would rank them. They might be the third most famous classic series alien behind Daleks and Cybermen. I mean, I guess if you include Time Lord, like Time Lords themselves are probably number one, but Daleks and Cybermen are up there too.
Well, because I'm trying to think of like my reference before we started this podcast to which Doctor related non-Doctor things I knew of.
Mm-hmm.
Dalek was one and Weeping Angels was another.
Mm-hmm.
Where do these then lie? Like, in reference to those two.
Well, why don't we make that a little bit about the Profasi today?
Fuck you. I'm just trying to yes and have a conversation, and then you gotta make it a sick, twisted, stupid game. I hate that.
Well, the thing is, I could try and, like, talk to you about what you know, but I feel like if I ask you this question, it will tell me how much you know about the Santarans. This is, like, the most obviously known thing about them. The Santarans resemble a vegetable.
Oh no.
And it's brought up a couple of times which vegetable they look like.
In
this episode specifically, they are named, so I'm gonna rely on the episode itself. So even if you technically find like something I didn't think about, the episode itself references what the answer to the question is. What vegetable do Santarans look like?
Oh no, because all I can think about is it was a commercial for Gushers.
Okay.
Do you remember? Like, years ago, early aughties,
mm-hmm.
there was a commercial where, like, it was for something fruit-flavored, and everybody turned into, like, you took a bite of the thing, and it was like, whoa, grape!
Now my head's a big grape!
Totally strawberry!
Ah, cool, now my head's a strawberry!
Oh, no, banana! All right, celery is the one thing that comes up, but that's only because of the Fifth Doctor?
Yeah, the Fifth Doctor had a celery on his lapel.
With a little piece of celery.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the only time I feel that vegetables have been mentioned.
Mm-hmm. I will say it was the Third Doctor, not the Fifth Doctor, so this was a couple Doctors before that, if that changes your opinion.
Well, but then I also know that you said that he only wore the celery on his lapel, because if he was around certain blank, it would turn purple, and then he would eat it.
If he was around certain toxins in the air, it would turn purple.
And then he could eat it.
And then he would eat it.
so that doesn't help me. A certain vegetable that's been referenced before?
No.
It has not been referenced.
No, it has not been referenced before. I mean, it gets referenced in this episode. So I'm telling you, like, it's not just me saying that. The episode itself calls out what the Santarans look
but
like.
But this is not something that I would automatically already know. Can I get some kind of hint?
It's a vegetable that you can eat.
That's most of them, my love.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure that you knew it wasn't like a flower or... I wasn't going to try and... I'm not asking you a trick question.
It's more in line with like cauliflower or... That's the only other vegetable I know.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the ones that we could have for dinner.
We do have this one for dinner.
Yes.
So it could be cauliflower.
Could be cauliflower.
It could be cauliflower, broccoli, or carrot, or green bean. Those are the only vegetables we have.
There are more vegetables than that.
Mushroom? That's not a vegetable. That's Mushroom's a fungus.
It's a fungus.
Those are the only vegetables we eat, dude. Zucchini. Well, because after a while, they all kind of start looking the same. Zucchini, cucumber, squash. They're all, like, shaped like that. Carrot. Carrot is, like, a pointy like that. Because you don't like celery, so I don't think it's celery. Because you said it's one that we have for dinner.
Okay.
And you said in the past, you don't like celery.
I don't like plain celery. I'm okay with it.
Like on a plate of hot wings? Yum, yum, yum. That's favorite part of the plate of hot wings.
It tastes like nothing
to me.
Like, I don't hate it. It's just like
yum,
nothing.
Yum, yum. No, it tastes like water. Like sea water.
Famously flavorful water.
A crunch. Yum, yum, yum. Maybe that's a ADHD thing. I just like it because it... In dip? Yum. Okay. Oh my god, Zach. There's too many. Now I'm remembering every vegetable I've ever eaten. Mm-hmm. Ever. Peas.
You think they look like pea people?
I don't know. Now you're just giggling at me. Chuckling it up over there. They look like this particular vegetable?
Look like they look like this vegetable.
What kind of alien would look... Like, I'm trying to think of what of those looks the most alien.
Mm.
That's how I'm boiling it down.
Yeah, makes sense.
That you could feasibly make, like, a people shape.
And you have to remember, they're making it look like... They had to be able to make them look like this in the 70s. It's not just like they could do it now with special effects.
I know.
They had to do it practically in the
70s. I'm really... Without it just being like... I'm an ear of corn, but it's a full human face in like an ear of corn. I'm a go potato.
Potato. All right, so Cassie believes that the Santarans look like potatoes. All right, and the second part of the prophecy today is that the Santaran stratagem, as it says in the title, is to take over the world using a very prominent machine. What machine do you think that could be?
Hi, my name is Zach. I like to come up with vague fucking questions. What do you mean, what kind of machine?
Yeah, it's a machine a lot of people have.
Now, is this a machine that a lot of people would have had back in the 70s as well?
Yeah, actually.
Is it the same thing?
I mean, I will say, back in the 70s, they didn't do this plan. But I will just answer your question. Yes, in the 70s, a lot of people had this machine too.
I'm having an existential crisis right now where my brain just keeps going, what is a machine?
Like someone just put on like a 1950s film reel. Like, what is a machine?
No. More like, I don't know if you ever had this experience. The California Science Center in specific, that's what I would be referring to.
Mm-hmm.
There were certain exhibits where you could pay to go in and see the exhibit, but they would have a big like IMAX film beforehand.
Yeah, we had one like that in Oklahoma.
Yeah. Specifically like, when we went to go see Body Worlds, they had an IMAX film about the human body. When they opened up the ecosystems exhibit, they had a whole big thing about global warming. And, you know, every narrator for those sounds a little bit like this. Approachable, but do not interrupt me while I am doing my spiel about the inside of the human body or the inside of a growing oak tree.
No questions until the end of the presentation, please.
Keep your questions inside your mind while I fill the inside of your mind with thoughts and ideas. What is a machine?
If any of you have questions, and ask them before I am ready, I will pelt paper at your head.
I will bulldoze over you with my words and my psychic powers.
I will call an airstrike on your house. You will have no home to return to.
It will be sudden and it will be scary. What is a machine? What is a machine, Zach?
I mean, a machine, I would just say it would be anything, you know, with something with an engine or something that runs on electricity that provides some kind of fundamental service to your life.
A car.
A car?
Yeah, well, because I'm trying to think of things that would be popular in the 70s and now.
Okay.
Toaster is one of them.
I like that your two options were car and toaster.
Well, the thing that gave it away for me was your first choice of, like, what a machine is you said engine.
Mm-hmm.
So that, to me, means car, if it is something that is readily available.
Okay.
In modern times, and by modern I mean anything past, like, the
1920s. Come to find out it's not a car, it's a lawnmower.
I mean, hey, we didn't have a lawnmower until, like, a year after living in our space with a lawn that needed to be mowed.
You know, true enough. All right. So Cassie's prefaces for the Sontaran stratagem are that the Sontarans look like potatoes and they plan to take over the world with cars. We will find out together as we watch the Sontaran stratagem.
I wrote potato-looking mofos. I feel like that's accurate.
I'm Potato Rick. Today's episode of Who Is My Doctor is brought to you by Babbel. Babbel ing, sorry, I did not read all of the copy here. And we are back from the Sontaran stratagem. Mm. Excellent!
Yes!
You know, I had gone... In my build-up to this episode, I had so wondered how you were going to feel about the Sontarans.
I feel indifferent towards them.
Really? I was not the... I really thought they were going to be a love them or hate them for you. I'm surprised by indifferent.
I am ambivalent towards them. If for no other reason... then I think that their suits are very silly.
That is true.
I do really enjoy the fact that their midsection is all packed.
Like, there's not, it's not even like abdomen because they wraps all the way around their waist. It's just, pack.
Yeah, there's several packs. And the size of their head suggests that they're, or like the size and shape of their head suggests that there's no neck. But their body would state otherwise because it's strangely proportionally small for how large the head and neck are.
Yeah, they're very, like, bulky. They're very,
But not.
Like, if it looks like they were...
Like, they're not hulking bulky.
Yeah, no, they're almost like they're built for football.
They're small wrestlers. Yeah. Like, they're really good at high school wrestling.
like a specific 5 foot tall league of football.
But they're not, like, thick. They're kind of built like a Stretch Armstrong.
Just with a head too big for the rest of their body?
Yeah.
They do sort of look like an upside-down bowling pin.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, a small bowling... Like, one that you would have in, like, a backyard bowling or one that you would get for children.
Yeah, it was so much, like... Well, when I was thinking about it, they're very silly. Like, they've got these... Well, one, they point out they look like potatoes. You get a point for that.
Baked potatoes. So potato.
Yes, you get a point for potato. But then they all... Because they all speak in some manner like this. Very...
I do like that quite a bit.
It's a very, like... Even the guy below... Like, obviously General Stahl sounds like that. But even the guy below him still sort of sounds like this as well.
I see you've taken off your helmet. Do I also have the opportunity and privilege of removing my helmet?
Thank you.
It's just...
And they're also, you know, they're very male. Like, there's a very, like...
They're a species built for war.
Yeah.
That's their favorite fucking thing to do.
The Santarans' entire thing is that they are a society of war. There's a very, like, almost Roman, like...
They're very Ares.
Yeah, a very, like, Alexander the Great style, like, mm-hmm. kind of ethos to them, where that really is,
and when
like
I say Aries, I don't mean like astrological sign, I mean like Aries, god of war.
Yes. Well, actually, they put it very well themselves, where there's a part in it where someone goes, he's basically making fun of him for being short. He's like, oh, did you get out of school early, you playing Humpty Dumpty? Is that a reference to my height?
Like, I appreciate the fact that they can understand human jokes a little bit, except for when Radigan says that something is cool, and he goes, well, hold on, I wrote it down because I thought it was silly. He's like, wow, 52 people dead in 1 second, that's so cool. And then he responds with, is the temperature significant?
Is the temperature significant? I love doing this voice. I'm gonna be doing it all episode.
Okay.
but you know, Stahl's response to being insulted is, words are the weapon of women folk. And it's just, you know, they do have, like, you know, the guys that are obsessed with, like, being an alpha. It's like an entire species of that.
So, it's very, I'm rewatching Orange is the New Black right now. That's the new hyperfixation for everybody who doesn't live with me. There's a correctional officer by the name of Mendez, who all of the women call porn stash because he's got this like short, like very 60s army dad hair, but he has this like
thick porny stash.
Porn stash. But that's his thing, is that somebody's like, so the mustache, like I see that in a lot of like gay porn. Is that like a gay thing? He goes, no, it's a man thing. It's for fucking men. It's a men thing. Strong fucking men. And it's okay, cool. So you're a little.
So you're fucking men. Got it.
Yeah. But that's what this reminds me of, is just somebody getting really offended and just. It's a man thing.
That's the thing. It's interesting that
it's a men thing.
They don't seem to get easily offended. What they do, which is a weird, like, position to put these people in, because you would think they're a lot about pride, but they're not about pride, they're about honor, which is a weird like dichotomy of this, like, because it feels like they should be whiny baby men.
Well, yeah, because in our modern society, men and being whiny babies are hand in hand synonymous. I don't feel like I've met a single like manly man who's like, wow, I respect him,
mm-hmm.
and he's honorable and great to be around. Nope. It's one of the three.
Yeah,
respect you and you're great to be around, or you're honorable and I hate being around you.
Any man projecting machismo is very very undesirable to be around. I also like that they point out that they have this weakness, but it's also sort of built into their honor system, where because they get fed through a tube in their neck, they always have to face their enemy in battle.
Yeah, to face death.
Which it feels very similar to, almost equal and opposite in ways, to the Ood having their brain in their hands, and so they have to trust everyone.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, they have their mouths on their necks, so they have to face all of their enemies in battle. It's a very, like, reverse justification for their biology that I kind of enjoy. We also have our snobby little brainy boy, our child genius.
Oh, my God. Radigan. Radigan with two T's.
Yeah. Who, you know, they cast that guy perfectly because that kid looks like that kind of sleaze. God. The kid who, like, knows way too much, like, brags about it in a way that makes you feel like maybe he really doesn't know as much as he does. But also, he clearly does if he runs this, like, private academy for all the smartest handpicked kids.
Yeah, okay, Xavier.
More like Elon Musk if Elon was actually smart.
Well, it's just, it is giving X-Men.
Yeah.
in that it is specifically a university for like extremely gifted individuals.
Yeah. That you know, at the beginning of the episode, we see them tossing out as a group. They all toss out this journalist that's doing an investigation on them. There is sort of this feeling that they're like his personal army, or like his toadies, I guess, for lack of a better word.
And I might add that the journalist was an Asian woman who said her name wrong, but I'll let this one slide.
I mean, I wonder if it's said differently because of the British accent.
Maybe.
You know what I mean? Like, just the inflections come out weird.
She said it as Nakashima, which would be Nakashima.
Mm-hmm.
I should know. That's half of my name. I could have been a Nakashima. Who's to say?
Maybe you're a Shima, but she's not a Shima.
Naka, N-A-K-A, dude.
I know, I'm doing a bit.
Hum. As for all minorities getting represented in a predominantly white cast, she gets killed almost immediately.
Yep. And killed by her car, which, another point for you, you are correct. It was cars that they have taken over the world with.
Woo. Not toasters.
Not toasters. Although that would still probably work if she drove into the river with a toaster.
Probably still would have worked if she was driving a Kia Soul. Hey, toaster car joke.
And we also have the return of Martha in this episode. It's only been a few episodes without her, so it's kind of shocking to get her back so quickly.
It is odd, because then I know I had asked the question of how much time has elapsed.
I mean, from her last episode until now, I would believe it's about 9 months. Because there would have been the end of her season, then the Christmas special, and then time between seasons. So I believe it would have been about,
because they said that Martha's only been gone for a couple of days.
Yeah, but Martha left at the beginning of this season, not since the Christmas special.
Yeah.
Time is kind of weird in Doctor Who. It's hard to say exactly how long it's been, but I would assume it's been at least a few months, given that Martha has gotten engaged. She's engaged to the devil. She says she's engaged to Tom Milligan, which is the name of Tom Ellis's character from The End of Time.
What a good joke.
Molest the Time Lords.
Timeless joke. I laughed at it the first time you said it too.
Thank you. I'm a regular Jerry Seinfeld over here.
Hey Zach, what is the deal with airplane food?
What's the deal with TARDIS food? It's bigger on the inside of your stomach.
Ugh. I will say, though, I do enjoy that Donna and Martha don't have the weird, like, companion rivalry that Rose had.
Yeah, Rose when Mickey showed up. How she was, like,
Mickey
so...
Mickey or Sarah Jane.
Yeah.
Where it was immediately, like...
I do like that, you know, the Doctor is prepared for that, too. He's like, please, guys, don't fight. Don't start fighting. And they're immediately just, like, talking shit about him.
No, they're immediately... Martha immediately goes, wow, I know why you keep her around. She's smart.
Yeah, or, you know, they do the same thing that Rose and Sarah Jane did, where Donna ingratiates herself to Martha by talking about how David Tennant is just a stick figure in a suit.
I missed that. I must have been writing something down.
So we got a little bit of their plan here. We saw that their plan is to... control these cars they've installed with the Atmos system. The Atmos system stops car pollution. Like, the cars don't emit their fumes anymore. However, it's because they've been stuck inside the Atmos system itself to poison the atmosphere. As you saw at the end of that episode, where the cars are shooting gas into the air.
Very, like, thematic, cool, theatrical gas.
Very visible.
Very clouds from Mulan.
Yeah, because, I mean, you would assume that it would have to be CO2, which CO2 isn't visible.
Yeah.
Generally speaking.
And then it just ends with the Doctor standing in a neighborhood slowly filling with gas, being overwhelmed and overstimulated.
Yeah, while Wilfred Mott is in the car being choked out by the gas in the car.
You gotta fucking get him out,
yeah,
buddy.
Gotta get the cool old man out of the car, man.
Yeah, he's a Doctor ally.
He's an icon.
He's an ally.
He is the moment. So, why don't we get into the cast of your fantasy for the second episode, The Poison Sky?
Because we are at a pretty momentous occasion where I have 50 out of 90 guesses correct.
Wow.
Yep.
So we're getting really close to your 100th for fantasy.
Wow. Wow. What do I get for that?
Hopefully a point.
But like a treat? Do I get a treat?
And when you get your every 50 perfasis, I have to bake you a cake. Or every 100 perfasis.
I was going to say, we're past 50 now. Or no, we're at 50 correct, buddy.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I guess I got to figure something out now.
Woo!
Well, we'll figure that
cake
out.
Cake time! Woo!
All right, so the first prophecy is a little dark because one of the human characters in this episode dies by the end of it.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
For your first prophecy, who do you see dying by the end of this episode?
Oh, no. If it's Wilfred Mott, I'm suing. Radigan.
You think Radigan's the one that dies at the end of the
episode? I do think that Radigan dies.
All right, so Radigan is the one that
dies. Or Martha, because her life is like doing really awesome, and that would just be really tragic and sad if she just KOs.
Yeah, that would be very sad.
Oh my god. Radigan feels the most likely, though.
Okay.
But so does Martha, because she's engaged now, her life is doing pretty okay, her family's...
Well, if you're going to think about Martha, recovering. Let me ask you the second prophecy, and maybe you can come up with the answer for both. At the end of this episode, does Martha keep journeying with the doctor again, or does she go back to her normal life?
Aw, man, I don't know, bro. Because if my guess is that she's dead, she can't do any of that.
Yeah, so I mean, if you want to say she's dead, the answer to that would be no. She doesn't keep journeying with the doctor.
Yeah, but also I want to see Radigan die. He's a brat.
I thought all this time you liked brats. Just not rich brats, I guess.
Ugh, no. Eat the rich. Not eat out the rich. I said eat out the rich, Zach.
I said eat out. I said eat out.
Because if this was like dramatic television, like competition TV, mm-hmm. The second that somebody starts talking about how much they miss their home, mm-hmm. That's the episode they're going back, honey. The second somebody's like, I miss my mom. Like in the confessional, like when they do the... Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're going home. That day, that episode, they're gone. So if you follow that logic, because Martha's life is like going well, she's doing good, that means she's going to die.
Okay.
I think that has to be my answer, because Radigan feels a little too obvious.
Okay.
I do think that there is a good chance that I am correct with him and that he does end up dying. And that I'm saying all this stuff about Martha, and it turns out she's actually A-okay, and oh, she's going to be.
Are you talking yourself
like
back into Radigan?
Another two or three episodes. Well, I'm trying to like peer through the veil and see what I can see. I'm trying to tap into my long legacy of being a Cassandra.
She has to run into her. Her mind palace and discuss with the
into
other Cassandras.
Into the other temple of fellow Cassandras. There's only like four of us.
Most people don't show up to the meetings.
No. I think that is more cinematic and okay. Interesting if she...
I will also remind you this is only episode 5 if that impacts your opinion.
Of this season?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, but I also know that Donna isn't. She sticks around for a while.
Yeah, they do have that whole moment where Donna's like, I need to go home. And the doctor, like, gives his big emotional monologue.
The camera slowly is zooming in on both of them.
Yeah. Oh, it's been great. You've saved my life in so many ways. Like, Doctor, you've been on, like, 3 journeys together.
So many ways.
I wanted to show you so many things, but thank you. You mean you're going home for a visit? Yeah. It's a good moment. really makes fun of, like, the melodrama that is the Doctor.
Yeah. Because my three choices are Martha, Wilfred, or Radigan.
Mm-hmm.
Radigan, I mean, feels the most likely, but I think Martha's more interesting, because then the second question is like a trick question. What does she do? Nothing. She's dead. So we'll go with that. I know that they're both wrong, but I want to get this ball rolling.
All right, so the Cassie Profassi today is that Martha is the human character that dies by the end of this episode, and therefore she will not be continuing with the Doctor at the end. We will find out together as we watch The Poison Sky. Execute the Poison Sky!
All right, Alan Tudyk. Calm down.
And we are back from the Poison Sky. What did you think of the episode, Cassandra?
I don't know. I didn't write a lot of notes for it, which is usually a sign that I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I don't know.
Okay.
Like, this one is leaving me feeling a little bit mixed. Like, it wasn't a Dalek episode, that's for certain. Like, it's just very formulaic, I suppose.
I don't know if formulaic is the right word, but there's definitely
just
like
it's very like there's something going on. The aliens are coming. The aliens take something that the Doctor really loves and cares about.
Mm-hmm.
And then second part. So the Doctor has something taken away from him, something he really loves and cares about.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next episode, oh, shitstorm starts happening, baby, and the Doctor doesn't have a way out of it, but oh, he figures out a way out of the thing.
It's a very, I guess, safe story, especially compared to the last few we've had.
Yes.
Like, we had the Fires of Pompeii, which is about, like, Donna making a moral argument to the Doctor.
Like, the stakes are so high.
Yeah, and then you get
one.
Planet of the Ood, which is, you know, sort of a slow burn leading to a climax of body horror. This one is just a pretty standard alien invasion.
Yeah.
Like, there's some fun ideas in it, for sure. Like, the fact that they have, it's not just the aliens invading, the aliens have, like, a human compatriot who's this... who's Luke Radigan, a child genius who has basically helped poison the world because he believes that they will
a
send him...
A child genius? That kid had 5 o'clock shadow the entire time.
Well, he's a grown person now, but he's been a genius since he was a child.
Yeah, okay. He was somewhere between, like, 15 and 37.
But, you know, they have this human compatriot who's helped them because he thinks that he will become basically king of the new world.
What was it? Earth 2.0.
It was,
Radigan Land.
I think they said Cantor 36 or Cantor 26.
I'd like to think of it as Earth 2.0.
Yeah. Because, you know, the Doctor even calls it out when he first walks into the room that he's got, you know, artificial gravity and terraforming and all these things that, you know, you could probably make a whole new planet with this, huh? And I really enjoy the look on the actor's face for Radigan when he's saying that, because you could tell that most people when they walk in that room have no clue what any of that stuff is, and the Doctor's like, I know that thing, I know that thing, I know that thing, and Luke's going,
I do like that they have a nerd off.
Yeah.
And they continue having a nerd off, and the Doctor comments on, like, what was, like, the burdens of being clever.
Yeah, the fact that you could see things and make connections other people's don't, they look like random things to everybody else, but you as a genius can make these connections.
It's something in when they're having their little grammar war.
Yeah, when the Doctor corrects his grammar and Luke Radigan gets so mad.
But it's the key word there is clever, because then that comes up again in the second part.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, jumping way the hell to the end, when the Doctor is like, I am sacrificing myself, like, you guys be good, Luke, do something clever. And then disappear, or, you know, teleports up to the spaceship.
Yeah.
Like,
to the Suntaran.
I was trying to figure out a better word for it than spaceship, but, like, the
Suntaran ship.
Yeah, like the launch bay.
Yeah.
And then Luke runs into the teleporter.
The big high school gymnasium all the Suntaran seem to be staying in.
And then Luke runs into the teleporter, and they're like, oh, no, what are you doing? He goes, I'm doing something clever. And well, he's right. It is clever.
I mean, it also looped back a second time because in the first episode, Luke's way of like getting back with the doctor was like, it's not Atmos system. The S stands for system. You're being redundant. Is that fine, Mr. Tautology? And then the Antarans do the same thing later. Or then you installed the Atmos system. It's not Atmos system. It's just Atmos.
That is very much kid who has been correcting people on things his entire life and is just sick of it.
Yeah. I mean, the doctor even says, oh, it's been a while since someone told you no, isn't it? And then this whole episode is people telling him, either telling him no or laughing at him, which are two things that Luke does not seem to be capable of handling.
I forget how sassy the doctor can be.
Oh, especially Tennant. Oh, what a sassy little bitch he is.
Well, that's just kind of the vibe Tennant brings to the function is being a little sassy.
He definitely has, especially when he puts on his brainy specs, he definitely has this air of like, I'm smarter than everyone here and you should be listening to me all the time. You can really, because you get those a lot when he's talking with Unit, because he keeps telling Unit, stop trying to fight the Santarans. Do what I say.
I'm right and you're wrong.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do about it.
I think it's really clever that the Santarans have, because they're soldiers, obviously everyone knows that they'll expect to face guns, so they have what's called the Cordelane signal that basically makes the bullets just a little bit bigger so they can't come out of the gun.
That's so stupid.
Which I think would just make the gun explode in their hands.
Well, because if you're firing it off, then you would have a buildup of pressure.
Yeah.
So rather than the gun not working, the pressure would cause it to backfire and, you know, explode, not from the barrel end, but from the...
Yeah, so maybe there's a better way they can explain that so it doesn't just sound like those guns should explode. But I do really like that they have a very simple way of taking care of guns.
Which, also, Doctor's super anti-gun.
Yeah, this is the first time that's ever really come up.
Like, incredibly so.
Which, it's... I mean, you don't necessarily know this, but... You know, if you knew a lot of the classic Doctors, that's actually pretty out of character. Because the third Doctor has fired guns. Like, it's not like... So I sort of have this pet theory that they've never really gone into it in the show.
Uh-huh.
But I think it's because of the Time War that the Doctor is not okay with guns anymore.
Now.
Yes. Because
now that the guns were not on his side.
Yeah, now that he's been a soldier... There's a different, like, definition of gun to him.
Which is very ironic, because everybody I know who's been a soldier is now super pro-gun.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, though, all the people you know that are soldiers are American soldiers, and we typically win. The America. Time Lords did not win the Time War.
America,
nobody did.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, so I'm sure there's a different context when everyone you ever knew has died.
Fair.
Although, in that same vein, though... It's something very weird because it clearly is specifically guns, because the Doctor has no qualms at the end of the episode igniting the atmosphere of the ship and blowing all of them up. It's something specific to guns.
The Doctor ignites the Earth's atmosphere.
Yeah, but what I mean is he goes to the Santaran ship specifically to kill them.
Well, he gives them a choice.
Yeah, but I mean, the plan is...
The choice, fully knowing what the Centaurans are going to choose.
It's less a choice and more an ultimatum. It's a very weird position to take, to be opposed to gun, but not opposed to blowing up a spaceship.
Yeah. Oh, I was saying, the Doctor is very... Like, it seems that is one of his favorite means of... Not democracy.
Moderating?
Perhaps, which is giving the illusion of choice, but it is just either I end you or you surrender and become my prisoner in subcapacity.
Yeah. And also, you know, there's a part of it that's just like, the Doctor knows that's not going to work. The Santarans are Santarans. Like, they... Crave a noble death in battle.
He knows the answer. One of them gets shot and he says... Wonderful. As he's dying.
Yeah, I really like that that guy playing the other Suntaran, because we really only see two of them's face.
That's all you need.
We see General Saul and the other guy's got this, like, delightful gap in his teeth. So he just looks a little bit, like, doofier than the general.
He looks very football player.
Yeah.
He's very quarterback.
Yeah, I would say so. It is, I mean, it's worth noting that, like I said, there's a part of him that looks, I say doofier, but I guess I really mean, like, almost friendlier. He just looks like he looks like a friend.
He looks way more like an interesting character.
Yeah. Which.
Well, because the other guy also has just like a patch of crepe hair glued to what would be his chin.
Glued to his necklace chin.
Yeah. Which it is confirmed they have no necks because when they get angry, they just kind of wiggle around.
Yeah. They have to do
They have to pull a page out of the Dalek book of emoting by just wiggling around.
They gotta do the Michael Keaton Batman turn, which is they have to turn from their waist instead of their neck because their neck is immobile.
Michael Keaton Batman turn. That's very funny. You know it's funny because I'm not laughing. I'm saying that it's funny.
The hallmark of a good joke is when you say, that's funny.
I clocked something in the beginning and I didn't know if you had more intel or if you noticed it. You noticed it.
What's that?
So in the very tippy top, maybe it's very tippy top. I'm forgetting where it is, but it's Donna looking at the like screen in the TARDIS for like half a second. There's a frame of Rose, right?
I don't remember.
Go back then because I know I saw it.
Okay.
Because we saw Rose in the first episode with Donna, because that's the blondie that she's talking to.
Was it the beginning of the second episode or the first episode?
Second episode.
Okay.
Right? That's very clearly Rose saying, Doctor.
Yeah, it really is. And can I tell you something? I've never caught that before.
Really?
I don't know what it is. I don't know if my brain just like filters those couple of frames out. But we went back and watched this, and I have never caught those frames before. That's wild to me. You caught that on your first shot. I've seen this episode probably four or five times. I've never caught that.
Genuinely.
Or if I have, I didn't remember that I saw it.
Well, yeah, because now after watching it back three times, that is very clearly Rose saying, Doctor!
Yeah. Which I gotta wonder what that's about, huh?
When you're negative. I'm smart. I caught something you didn't.
You absolutely did. That's a really cool catch. I like that they put that in there because it's not distracting from the plot, but it definitely adds a little bit of intrigue.
Well, because now at this point, I haven't seen her now in any other instance. So this means that now we've seen two
instances of Rose popping up.
Yeah.
When she is supposedly trapped in another dimension.
Yeah.
On Pete's World, my favorite theme park. One thing another companion we can talk about that you actually finally get a little bit more meat off of is Wilfred Mott.
Yeah!
Everyone's favorite grandpa.
He's so supportive.
He really is. And, like, it's so, like, unwavering, too. Like, there's never a moment where he questions the doctor, but he's so happy that Dawn is happy, and he also thinks it's so cool that he's an alien. At one point, the doctor shakes Wilfred's hand, and he goes, alien hand.
Like, it's, especially since Donna also seems to have kind of a crappy mom. Not crappy, but just
a little overbearing. A little judgmental.
Especially since now we've seen Martha's mom being a little overprotective and getting involved in places where she shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jackie, who's also a little overbearing.
Yeah, this show's got a real problem with moms.
It's just really nice to see a parental figure who is unwaveringly supportive.
Yeah, there's that really nice moment at the beginning of The Poison Sky where after they finally saved everyone, Donna like runs off to go help the doctor. And her mom is like, get back here. You're not safe. And Wilfred's like, no, go.
Don't listen to her. Go. Yeah. We're fine.
It's very funny because when I think about, you know, Wilf, and I think about Pete, and then I think about, you know, Martha's dad being the one that, you know, says,
is there someone else there? Yes! Just run!
Hi! That's me! Stop it!
This show seems to have a real problem with moms and a real favor to father figures.
You say that, but also fear her. That dad was bad.
That was a bad dad.
That was a bad dad.
So he was so bad, he was art in a closet.
He was just a scary man. He's a voice.
Just a scary man.
But even that mom was kind of like, not the best. Hey, Zach, I think this show hates women.
I don't think it hates women. I think it's a I think it's a trope that they accidentally fell into multiple, because you need some sort of conflict to make characters interesting. Like, that's,
and like, they're, it's more, or not more interesting, but it's more relatable if the daughters have issues with their mothers, because that, I don't know very many people that have genuinely awesome, wonderful, healthy relationships with their moms.
Yeah.
Like, every daughter does love her mom, and mm-hmm. there's always a part that's like, that's my first friend. Mm-hmm. I can't ever be truly angry or upset with her, and I will always forgive her, but also...
like, also cannot stand her.
Yeah, like, it's very rare that you find somebody who's like, oh my god, this woman is my absolute everything, love her, do everything with her, says no wrong, does no wrong. So it's a little bit more relatable to have a more antagonistic relationship between mother and daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happens that every companion that we've seen up until this point has been a woman, therefore has a tumultuous relationship with her mom.
Yeah. I mean, when we get to the men, we get, like, Mickey, and there's, as far as we can tell, there's no parents.
Well,
there's his grandma.
I was going to say, on the contrary.
I will say, that's one nice. Mickey's grandma, she's a real winner.
So far, grandparents are for the win.
We only have
the two examples, but, you know, we're building a case here.
Well, I'm also, you know, we're talking about this relationship between mothers and daughters. I'm remembering there's a comedian, I can't remember her name, so editing Zach put it in for me here. Her name is Jen Brister. She is a British comedian. If you want to find out more about her, you could find out on jenbrister.co.uk. She is very funny. Go check her out. Where she had said that the relationship between mothers and daughters is very different from mothers and sons. For mothers and sons, it's the mom's always like, mommy loves you very much. You don't have to do anything. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to love you. Everything's going to be wonderful for you, my sweet little baby. And then the relationship between mothers and daughters is, you look fat in that.
I can't say that I fully understand that, because I do not have human children of my own. However, I do have cat children. Now, I will say, I love them both the same. Each one of my cat children, I would do everything and anything for. Monty, oh, my sweet boy, just want to squeeze him and love him, and he pees on my stuff, but that's okay, he's just anxious and that's what he needs to do. Bailey barfs on my new rug, she's dead to me, I hate her.
You follow her around going, you're a fat little baby all day.
You chunky little bitch. You cut to, oh, look at her right now, licking herself. So sweet, so cute. Just wants to be a part of it. And also, she's not chunky because she's so old. She needs to eat more. But when she eats more, she barfs. And then she barfs on my rug. But the point that I'm making is, like...
And thus the cycle begins anew.
It's way easier for me to be, like... It's way easier for me to be kind of mean to Bailey, because I know that she will always come back. Mm-hmm. And not mean, and like, you know, and I don't need to explain myself to anybody. I love my cats very much. Mm-hmm. I'm mean to her with words, not with actions, because that would be horrible.
Mm.
And she doesn't speak English, so she doesn't know.
You heard it here first. You can insult people who don't speak English.
She's not people, though. She's a cat. I even think that you could expand it upon the relationship between women and the relationship between men and women. Because, like, my female friends, oh, man, it's hot and cold. I'm in hot water with every single one of them. That's not a fact. That's the worms in my head that are being terrible. My male friends, though, I know we've got each other all the time, always. I don't need to check in on them. We're good. Because I would say the quantity of, like, very good female friends to very good male friends is pretty equal for mm-hmm. me. But again, all of the female friends, I'm like, oh no.
If you don't talk for a few days, you think they hate you.
Oh my God, they're mad at me. I know it. The boys, though, some of them I haven't talked to in months. We're good. We're fine.
It. I mean, I will say the show does get better about that. There are plenty of future parental figures that are positive. It's not all, like women too. It's a nice... And it, right now, it's just, I think, a trope they've accidentally fallen into in the pursuit of making interesting, dynamic characters.
Yeah.
I don't know any other shows by Russell T. Davies, so I can't really say if that's a him trope or if it's just where he fell.
Do you think Russell T. Davies has mommy issues?
I mean, I wonder, there's a part of me that because he's a gay man, I wonder if he just generally has a part of him that wants to write men more affectionately. Because that's where his...
Well, that is also...
where he finds affection.
We were discussing it earlier with the Centauran.
Mm-hmm.
Centauran.
The Centaurans.
Yeah. That they are the, like, epitome of male machismo, but with honor.
Yeah.
So, like, them aside, the show also does like to showcase... men being more complex and not as one-dimensional, or even if they are a little bit more sensitive, that's not something to be made a joke of, except for that one episode where the doctor called Mickey a little girl because he was screaming at having dehydrated and
it's still weird.
Freeze-dried rats.
It's still so
on
weird.
Him. That episode we recorded twice, and I remember making that point in each time we recorded it.
Yeah, cause it's very,
because it's weird.
It still feels
so
out of place.
Out of calorie.
Yeah,
like even the doctor being like anti-gun, yes, feels a little out of character. But there are justifications for it. In that particular episode, there are no justifications for the doctor belittling Mickey in that way.
Yeah, and it's never really he's never done it again that way either. It's just very weird. The gun thing does kind of come out of nowhere, but like I said, there's a justification for it that you can kind of make. Especially knowing that he's, you know, a traumatized soldier or traumatized veteran. Like, there's a part of it where you're like, okay, I kind of get it. The belittling thing, especially, like, belittling a man by describing him as feminine, is so weird and doesn't really make sense for the doctor to be, because the doctor comes from an inherently gender-fluid people. So, you know, it's just, it's a very weird thing.
I digress.
Yeah.
I did like the doctor referencing himself, referencing his past trauma with, "Are you my mummy?"
Oh, yeah, when he's wearing the gas mask.
Stop fooling around!
I guess we should also, before I forget, we can also talk about your Cassie Professy points here.
I would like to fill out a form. I plead.
So,
I get half a point.
So I will say...
Half a point.
When I asked the question... What I had meant was that Luke Radigan dies, and I had forgotten when I had crafted that question that Martha does technically die in the episode too.
Like, if you want to be a jackass, her clone dies.
Yeah, granted.
But that's not Martha.
Yeah, granted.
Because one cannot live while the other also lives.
Yeah, because, you know, I had phrased which of these human characters, so technically speaking, she shouldn't count, but also there's a part of me that, just for the fact that I forgot about that and shouldn't have asked that question, I'm going to give you the point anyway.
The whole point?
Well, because I feel like there have been other points where you've been half right, and so I'm just going to say that I'm going to, at this point, count all of those, like, tenths of a point together.
All of those times of me sitting here begging, pleading,
yeah,
thrashing on the floor.
I'm going to say that I have taken them, I have super glued them together, and you have now earned one extra point.
Wee! I thought I was going to have to do a whole big thing.
However, on point two.
Yeah, I'm really angry about that one because I thought I had that in the bag.
Yeah, especially because Martha's like, nah, guys, I really can't hang around. I'm going to leave. I got a whole adventure of my own to go. And then the TARDIS is like, fuck that. You're coming with us on the next adventure.
Yeah.
Bitch.
Now, that does bring me to the next point. It does pan over to the doctor's hand, which I just wrote as Doctor Hand, which is so funny. Doctor Hand.
Doctor Hand would be a great name for a Muppet.
Or, Yeah, just a naked Muppet. Yeah. What was it? Oobies?
Yeah. Oobie. Where they just had the googly eyes on top of the hand.
Yeah, and it was the puppeteers just really flexing how awesome their hands are and just like how emotive they can be with dim five fingers.
Yeah, that'd be really. It's like Doctor Hand, my podiatrist.
That's the sound of googly eyes.
Click, 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 click.
Anyways, but yeah, it panned over and it just got a fat and juicy shot of the doctor's hand, which is how Captain Jack found him in the first place.
Oh, yeah. For a second, I thought you meant the doctor was doing something with his hands.
No, I forgot
that you were talking about the one in the hand in the jar.
Yeah, jar hand.
Yeah.
So that means the hand is being summoned. I don't know.
The hand is being summoned.
Well, it just is weird to me that they would focus in on it.
I mean, I guess I feel like they were just reminding you the hand is there.
Well, yeah, but there has to be a reason for that reminder that the hand is there.
The hand just, like, crawls out of the jar like Cousin It from the Addams Family.
That could be Dr. Hand. Oh, my God. Cousin It was the hairy one. That's just the thing.
Oh, yeah, right. The thing. I'm sorry.
Thing.
Yeah, I got them mixed up. Thing. The thing from Adam's Family.
If Thing went and got a PhD, then he would be Dr. Hand.
Yeah, Thing is just out there in the TARDIS, constantly in a little jacuzzi.
Years and years ago, my friend had her birthday party at the Magic Castle.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the magicians that we saw was the Thing. Like, that was his...
His
like,
bit was the hand?
No, like, he is the hand. His hands are the hand.
Oh, okay. You mean he was the guy that played
yeah.
it? Okay. I thought you were saying
Turns out he's really good at card tricks because he had to get real dexterous with them long, skinny-ass fingos.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I just remembered watching that going, golly, that's really cool. And then we also saw
really hand-dexterous.
Oh, my God. And then we saw one of Chris Angel's magical advisors. His name was Joe Monty. I remember that because Monty... Even then, as a young girl, I knew Monty's going to be a very significant name for me. But yeah, it bums me out that I can't remember his name. But I do like now the crossover universe where the Doctor's hand does turn into the Thing and just starts causing mischief in the TARDIS.
Yeah.
The Doctor would love having an additional hand, though. What are you talking
about?
Yeah,
he really would. I mean, Yeah, that's why he has the sonic screwdriver, so he can reach things. It's like, you know, someone with, like, one of the grabby hands.
Oh, my God. One of the dinosaur?
I was thinking, like, the more utilitarian little claws.
Oh,
sure.
Ones for, like, people in wheelchairs that need to reach up high up things?
Yeah, exactly.
Not the cool clackety-clack ones from the zoo?
I mean, those are the same thing. Just one of them is for much cooler old people.
Clackety-clack ones from the zoo, huh?
I really like that they, you know, they showcase that Donna and Martha... I mean,
Donna and Martha sitting in the TARDIS.
MOCKING, the Doctor.
First comes laughing, then comes laughing some more, then comes laughing at the Doctor and his whore. What?
First comes pointing, then comes laughing.
First comes pointing, then comes mocking, then comes something in a stocking.
It really got away from you there at the end, huh?
Yeah, I wasn't prepared for this.
Fine. I like that they really showcase that Donna and Martha have different skill sets as people.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're both intelligent, and so they wanted to make sure that he didn't accidentally make Martha seem like being a doctor is the only way women can be smart. Because they showcase that Donna has this moment where because she's a temp, she knows how to read business files, and so she points out, hey... None of the workers here ever have sick days.
I really liked that.
Yeah.
As somebody with, like, menial skill set, where, like, I could make a mean cup of coffee, mm-hmm. sure. I don't think that that's a useful skill. So when I see other people that also have seemingly useless skills say, hey, yeah, since I was a temp and I worked in an office for so many years, I noticed something a bit unusual and odd that one of these files was completely empty.
Yeah, it's one of those, you know.
And it's the, like, I don't know why it's empty, but I know it's important. It was her saying, it's a sick file. Nobody here gets sick. Instead of doing the like dumb Midwestern girl bit.
Yeah.
I don't know who does that. Gee whiz. So it doesn't sound like anybody I know.
You know, the doctor pays a lot of lip service to the idea that ordinary people are like remarkable in their simplicity.
Well, that's his whole reason for loving the human race.
Yeah. But what I mean is, like, we hear him say that a lot. This is one of those times where the show actually shows that. They don't just like sit there and like repeat like the, oh, being ordinary is so nice to really be.
Humans sure are incredible. Look at everything we can do.
Yeah. So there's a part of it where it stops, where it doesn't feel like the show is bullshitting you by saying that. Because I think it's really easy to be cynical when the doctor's like, every ordinary person's important. And you're like, I don't think
so. Yeah, but you're also an all-knowing, like all-powerful being.
Yeah, so
control space and time. Like, you can't be sitting here telling me that I'm special when I don't have a magic flying police box.
You're wearing a coat from Janis Joplin, dude.
Oh, yeah, he is, isn't he? Your Converse stay that same kind of old forever. If you ever notice, the Doctor's Converse, they don't seem to wear down ever at all. He's got magic shoes, bro.
Either that or he's got so many. He's got a pair for every day.
They're also red, so that leads me to believe that it's just like the Wiz version of Dorothy's shoes.
I do wonder if because he's wearing Converse, the implication is that David Tennant's Doctor skateboards.
I just thought the implication was that David Tennant's Doctor is an all-star.
He's got to get his game on.
Go. Hey.
But yes, the next adventure will have Donna and Martha again. And the next episode is also titled The Doctor's Daughter.
Yeah, with what I could surmise from the thumbnail. Is that Kristen Bell?
It's not Kristen Bell.
Okay, it do be looking like Kristen Bell.
She is someone of importance, but I will tell you all about that on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Nobody else saw it, but I feel like you could hear it. Zach just stuck his little hands up in the air. Like somebody holding a fat little raccoon.
I've been doing that since I was a kid.
It was really cute.
No, I mean, I'm not even like protesting it. I've legitimately been doing that my whole life.
Jazz hands.
Yeah, my mom likes to joke about the fact that when I was younger, when I wanted to like say something, I would walk into a room and like gesture grandly to the ceiling, like I was making an important
your little
announcement.
Foot goes with it too. It's incredible.
Anyway, as I was saying, we will talk about why she is important on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Hey, Zach.
Yeah?
Who's my doctor?
Who is indeed?
Good morning, good evening, and good night.
If I don't see you.
Yeah, wait, fuck. Oh, my phone, it's gone. Whatever, we'll do it next time.
And that concludes another rousing episode of Who Is My Doctor? A most honorable journey for you to have...
Okay, I think I've been doing that voice too much, so before I totally lose my voice, be sure to subscribe to this podcast and give us a like or 5 stars to help the algorithm lead us to other Whovians. You can also follow us on Twitter, Blue Sky Threads, and Instagram at WIMDPod. That's WIMDPOD. Next week we'll... Oh god. My voice. It's leaving. We'll see you next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Whosdays.